Blog Talk Radio.
Alrighty, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
One more time this week, it's the 20th of 2020.
Alright. And we got plenty of combat sports news to cover tonight. Don't have a guest again. I will definitely work on that this coming week. But, yeah, plenty of news to cover. It was a pretty good Friday night fights last week. Did watch it. It was a pretty interesting main event. Unfortunately, when the announcement was read, both guys thought they won there for a second because they had such similar names. Roberto Garcia and Norberto Gonzalez or something?
Yeah, I ended up missing the main event. Actually, you know why I missed the main event last week? It wasn't one of them. I was falling asleep. I was kind of tired. I had to leave the room because my dog started farting so bad I couldn't take it. And I actually had to leave the room because he stunk the room up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I ended up getting on the computer. Somebody messaged me and ended up talking God knows who. I get distracted very easy.
Well, it was a good show all around. We got Tom here. Second Tom is really on fire.
All right. How are we doing?
Good. So, we got lots of news to cover. They didn't mention something on the Friday Night Fights that I was kind of surprised by, but they actually said something about Oliver McCall. Ended up talking about him for a while, and they said he's still actually boxing. And he had a fight over the weekend, so I looked him up there and boxed him. Because I got the reminder here. They also mentioned something that I'm surprised I didn't know about. I don't know the exact date, but a fighter and boxer named Oscar Gonzalez died in Mexico. In the last couple of weeks and Friday night fights, and I was really surprised that I didn't even get a single Google alert or anything about this guy's death. So I don't know why you usually hear about that type of stuff. But he was a pretty big time boxer guy. Record on hand, but he had over 20 games. And here's the UFC story. Alistair Overeem has turned down two fights with Junior Dos Santos, two different types of fights. One would have been a five-round main event, and the other one would have been a three-round co-main event. And the five-rounder would have been a three-will. But apparently Overeem won none of it. And Dana White came out and said he wants nothing to do with Dos Santos. He's literally hiding from him.
Well, Overeem has said that the problem is not that he's afraid of Dos Santos. He said he's injured. So
right.
We'll have to form our own conclusions.
And he wants to fight Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar. Okay. I don't fight again.
Well, right now, and with the way Dana has the habit of not paying these guys the top dollar, I mean, we've seen what was the most Brock ever made in for a single UFC fight?
Probably around $600,000.
$600,000, right? Now, right now, Brock has got a deal with WWE going on, and he's only contracted to work a limited number of shows a year. Sometimes all he has to do is show up on Monday night, get in the ring, beat some people up, you know, just stand there and just look intimidating, maybe do an interview. And then he wrestles usually only the big shows. And when I mean the big shows, I'm always talking about WrestleMania, SummerSlam, maybe the WrestleMania, or maybe the pay-per-view right after WrestleMania, I think it's called Backlash. He does literally four pay-per-views a year. And he's only contracted to be on, like, 15, 20 Monday night shows. and he's making a couple million for that. And now the speculation is this year for WrestleMania, he's going to go up against The Undertaker. And it's going to be, obviously they're going to use the footage of a couple years ago when Brock lost that one fight and he's leaving the ring and him and The Undertaker had words. I'm sure that'll be involved in the promotional build-up. And then, of course, they're going to talk about The Undertaker's undefeated streak at WrestleMania and then him and Brock, like, back when he was first WWE champ, like, 10, 12 years ago, they had a feud, and Undertaker never beat him, and blah, blah, blah. So, literally for that one night in a scripted sport, which is still very physical, but it's scripted, and he's going to make more than that, and he'll make more than that in the course of a year than Dana White would buy him. So, why would he even think about going to UFC, to be totally honest? And let's not forget, the diverticulitis is not an easy thing to get over. Well, I mean, why go out there and really take the risks? Go in there, do the WWE thing, make a lot more money, and, I mean, I think that's a better move for him right now and better for his physical well-being.
Yeah, I would agree, because his midsection is a target, especially after that Overeem fight with that kick to the liver. You know that... he's risking a lot. You're right.
Well, getting back to Overeem, he said, I'm hurt. He has a rib problem. But he said, first, I need an ETA on recovery time, and it would not be wise to accept any fight before knowing exactly what's up. I wouldn't want to pull out of any fight due to being unfit, especially anticipating fighting like this one. So it's not necessarily that he doesn't want to fight Dos Santos, according to him, is that he's hurt. So we'll see if he changes his tune when he gets healthier. But it's kind of funny, he's got another rib problem, because apparently the first rib problem that he had not too long ago, a few years ago, was something his doctor, he said, or he claimed his doctor gave him an injection for that made him pop positive on his testosterone levels there. So let's hope he's not getting regular injections again to fix that. Speaking of injuries, Rashad Evans announced recently that he suffered a leg injury and will not be able to compete in the co-main event of UFC 170, where he was supposed to face Daniel Cormier. And Daniel Cormier will be taken off the card entirely. So we're going to actually reschedule that fight for later on in the year. Apparently, the injury is not that bad. It's not a break or a tear or anything, so he's just going to need, I guess, 4 weeks of rehab, according to Lorenzo Fertitta.
Now, are they going to get a substitute fight in there at this late date on this short notice? Have you heard anything about that, Rich? Anyone stepping up?
Nothing really to replace that, and they don't plan on, doesn't say whether they plan on moving the next fight on the list up to the co-main event.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what they're going to do about that. I think they're just going to go with it the way it stands, but I don't know. Could change. Get a few days here before they make a big decision on that. UFC 170, that's not the first change that we've seen here. The other fight that was supposed to happen was Gilbert Melendez versus Khabib Nurmagomedov was cut out of the card because of a contract dispute, which we'll get to later. And then there was a match between Rustem Khabilov and Rafael Anjos, and Khabilov was injured, so now that's on the face Nurmagomedov. So, oh, here it says, it is likely that the welterweight bout between Rory McDonald and Demian Maia will be elevated to co-main event status. So, bump it up. And here's a little boxing story. Brian Vera is going to have a March 1st rematch with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. on HBO Boxing, HBO Championship Boxing, from the Alamodome in San Antonio. So that should be a pretty good fight.
And now the question is, first of all, two questions. Was Chavez come in any better shape than he did last month? Because he was absolutely destroyed. I mean, just disgustingly out of shape, really showed a lack of respect and a lack of effort trying to make the weight. Came in, I think it was like something like almost 10 pounds, if not more, over the contact of weight limit. And he was like shit. I mean, he really was terrible. Sometimes, man, I'll give you an example. When Arturo Gatti fought Joey Gamache, and Gatti, there was disputes that he made the weight. And he got in the ring, and he was about 19 pounds larger than Gamache. And he iced him. He knocked him out cold and actually ended Gamache's career because Gamache suffered a brain damage in a fight. But this one, Chavez coming in that much heavier was a disadvantage because he was just grossly out of shape. He was sluggish. And Vera actually took the toll in the whole fight. And a lot of people, including myself, thought Vera won that fight. Now, so the question is, can Vera duplicate that effort? And the other question is, will Chavez come in better shape and having maybe a little bit more respect for his opponent?
Right. Yeah, it'll definitely be a different fight. We don't know how different, though. We'll see. Talked about contract negotiations with Gilbert Melendez. Dana White is very pissed off about the whole process. He says, I'm done. It's not going well, and I couldn't care less at this point. I like Gilbert Melendez very much. I just don't like his management. If Gilbert Melendez wants to fight in the UFC, he better call Lorenzo Fertitta quickly. But he should also probably start looking elsewhere. And Melendez is 1-1 since leaving Strikeforce, forcefully, I guess. Going over to the UFC, he had a debatable split decision loss against Benson Henderson at UFC on Fox 7 last April, and then beat Diego, what's his name?
Sanchez.
Diego
Sanchez. Sanchez. Diego Sanchez.
By a decision, I think. Yeah, it was a decision.
Yes.
It was in football. And it was a pretty good note to start his contract negotiations off on, but it doesn't seem to have produced any results. And then, as I mentioned, he was supposed to fight Nurmagomedov, and that fight fell through because of the whole contract situation. So who knows what's going to happen there, but it's interesting. You know, we haven't really had a real high-profile contract dispute or big-time fighter in this position, I think, since Randy Couture, when he actually had a press conference to talk about his issues with the UFC. I don't think Gilbert's there yet, but you never know. He could be moving to another promotion. Frank Mir has said he is interested in continuing to fight, but only with the UFC. Dana White said that he and company chairman Lorenzo Fertitta are scheduled to meet with Mir to discuss the fighter's future in coming days. And no decisions have been made on whether the UFC would release him. And he is on a 4-fight losing streak. So that has usually been the end of most fighters in the same position. Junior Dos Santos, Daniel Cormier, Josh Barnett, and just now, recently, Alistair Overeem are the 4 people who beat him. So, among those, only one is a former champion. Josh Barnett never had a UFC championship, did he? I don't think so. So, that's a tough one for them to decide. I would think they'd keep him around just because of his name recognition, but they'll probably give him an ultimatum, you know, if you look like crap in your next fight, we're just going to have to pull the trigger, so.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of times it's 3 and out, And I know that he has a history, and when he's on, he's awful entertaining, but he just looked, in that last fight, like his head was elsewhere. So I know I would agree with you, though. That's what they'll probably tell him, one more chance, but that's got to be, this has got to be it.
And the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame is inducting some more folks in member this year, and most of them that are actual boxers are heavyweights. We've got the list right here, and it includes Joe Louis, Jack Dempsey, George Foreman, Sonny Liston, Evander Holyfield, and Archie Moore. So, a lot of heavyweights there.
And yes, sir, the one picture on headline today, congratulating Foreman and Holyfield, is a picture of them after the fight. They're obviously going to only get it.
What?
This is one picture today, congratulating Foreman and Holyfield. It's posted online. It was a picture of them after their fight, which ironically was held in Atlantic City.
Oh, yeah. And our buddy, former guest Richard Steele, so going in with Kenny Clark, who actually gets a lot of credit, established his own career, and Kenny's still laughing out there, so. Another couple members going to be inducted are Roberto Duran and Cornelius Boza Edwards. Boza Edwards was a Las Vegas resident, and he works with fighters over at Floyd Mayweather Jr.'s gym, and he's going to be entered as a Nevada resident boxer. Where he fought from 1976 to 1987 and had a 45-7-1 record, 34 knockouts. And he was also the WBC Super Featherweight Champion in 1981. So who else? We've got former Nevada Athletic Commission Chairman Luther Max and former Executive Director Chuck Minker, longtime trainer and cutman Miguel Diaz, netmaker Bruce Trampler, former Review Journal boxing writer Kevin Ioli, podcaster Colonel Bob Sheridan, and casino executive Steve Wynn and Clifford Perlman. And coincidentally, Steele actually worked Boza Edwards' famous fight against Bobby Chacon in 1983 at Caesar's Palace, where Chacon won a unanimous decision in the Ring Magazine's Fight of the Year for that year.
Yeah, I remember that. Chacon was just about finished. I don't know how he came back. And that was kind of one of those fights that I don't think Chacon ever was quite the same after it either. I mean, he just, it's probably on YouTube. If you guys haven't seen it, try to find it.
Well, Richard Steele said they're both great honors, but this one hits close to the heart because it's Nevada, and Nevada is home. And he's talking about the other honor that he's being inducted to the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Steele also said, I know so many of the guys that are going in, these are people who helped make boxing in this state. What makes it really special is that I get to go in with Dick Bayless, someone who I helped break in. Still one of the finest referees in the world. So I got that reversed there. So that's Steele before Bayless, not Bayless before Steele.
You know, what's funny, speaking about Richard Steele, I got my Ring magazine 2 days ago, and I've been reading some new articles, and one of the articles in there was about Richard Steele. I didn't get a chance to read it yet, but I did see in there with regards to the famous, one of the famous controversial fights between Melvin Taylor and Julio Cesar Chavez back in 1990 about the controversial stoppage. And he came out and said that it was determined after the fight that Melvin, the fluids around his brain had dehydrated, and that's why he could not answer when asked if, are you okay, after the knockdown in the 12th round. And he said he still defends his stoppage, even though it was 2 seconds left, and Chavez never will have landed another punch. And, I mean, obviously so many people, including myself, feel so bad for Meldrick that he had that And the game was got stolen from him. But at the same time, you know, you read a point like that, and it really hits home, especially when you're seeing guys like Magomed Abdusalov getting injured. You had young Mexican fighter who passed away recently. And when you see stuff like that, and then you see somebody who erred on the side of caution, kind of puts it in a new perspective.
Yeah. You know, it's still, as controversial as it was, it's still one of the biggest fights of all time, considering the controversy surrounding it. And it actually set a record, I think. It probably still stands as the latest stoppage in the fight. So, it was a pretty big deal at the time. And as much as people might still give him shit, thinking that... you know, that should have been Meldrick's win. It's boxing. That's what it is. You know, shit happens. So you got to roll with the punches, they say.
Pun intended.
It's a lot of other highlights of his career too that people should be talking more about, like all of his title fights that he reffed without issue. So most referees had at least one big controversy to get over, and it just is. Can you do? We saw even Herb Dean now has a controversy. UFC. He's probably only had a fraction of referee fights that Steele had. Anyway, UFC is making some changes in post-fight bonuses now. I know we've talked about this in the past. And we've made some suggestions that obviously they have not taken here, but the one question I have on this change is, what is the motivation on their part? I think I can answer it, but I wonder if there's an ulterior motive behind this that they don't want. But anyway, let's get to the actual changes first. They usually hand out, as we know, bonuses for Fight of the Night, Submission of the Night, and Knockout of the Night. Now, these bonuses once ranged between $20,000 all the way up to $120,000, but then in 2012, they made them all $50,000 for all. And there's also still what they call locker room or discretionary bonuses, where, you know, it might not be an official designation as whatever of the night, but it's, you know, bonus for doing a good job, and I'm pretty sure they still do that. But their official statement says that they're modifying their bonuses. Effective immediately, they will award Fight of the Night bonuses to each of the fighters in the best fight of the night, as well as additional Performance of the Night bonuses to the best individual performances on the card. The bonus amounts will remain up, as the Performance of the Night bonuses will be put on the best and most exciting individual performances. Eliminate Submission and Knockout of the Night. Instead, they're going to give bonus to each competitor involved in the best fight of the night. And then Performance of the Night. So, doesn't mean fighters won't be rewarded for knockouts or submissions, because both of them can fall into the gray area known as Performance of the Night. So, now they just have options, instead of just handing out checks for a knockout or a submission, which is probably a byproduct of that card with all the decisions, where they probably, or some other cards where they just don't have a lot of good knockouts, or again, there's only one submission or one knockout, and they don't want to give it to that guy, they'd rather give it to somebody who had a better fight, overall fight. So I think that's one of the reasons why I decided to do this. But another reason that's been hinted at is the head injury issue. Because it's such a hot topic at the moment, because they just gave money to a study on head injuries, some people speculate that this is a public relations who kind of make it look like they're not encouraging brain injuries. Guys do inflict brain injuries on each other. So this is a kind of gentler way of saying we don't condone knockouts. I don't know if they ever come out and say that, but you know, I think I mentioned at one point, I wrote a whole article about how the bonus system itself encourages more dangerous fights. So I predicted back then it was going to end up being an issue. That's a good idea if you want people to tune in and want people to see exciting fights. In the long run, it's kind of a safety issue. And a lot of people kind of laughed that off at the time, and in the comment section on Facebook. Now we're seeing them go down that route, getting rid of those type of bonuses. But what they still didn't do, Tom and I both suggested at different points, is that they ought to have a finish bonus, just for a finish. And that's not necessarily finish of the night, just finish period. I mean, if you really want these guys to stop filling cards with decisions, then just give them an official finish bonus. They might already do that, though. We don't know. That could be just part of a discretionary bonuses. But if you're going to do it for one person, you have to do it for everybody. So I think they should just initiate that across the board, whether it's a public thing or not. You know, they ought to be doing it. So I don't have any. The opposite of a bonus, I guess, is when you get taken out. Jeez, this is a crazy story in Brazil. Over in Natal, Brazil, a Brazilian MMA fighter was murdered, shot and murdered. And then just recently, another tragedy in the capital city of Rio Grande do Norte. Two men shot and killed lightweight fighter Guilherme Matos Rodriguez. And this was only a day after Brazilian MMA fighter Luiz DeFranco was shot and killed. This was Tuesday night when Rodriguez was at a juice shop. And the assailants approached the shop on a motorcycle before opening fire. And Rodriguez didn't get to the hospital, but he passed away during surgery. He was 30 years old. And these guys were from the Pitbull Brothers gym down there. They're pretty big over in Bellator, I know. Patricio and Patricky Pitbull. Rodriguez was nicknamed Kyoto. He debuted as a professional in 2005, amassing a 19-9 record, according to Sherman. And he's in the cage with Nelson Gomes and John Teixeira, as well as UFC vet Eliardo Santos twice and Ronis Torres. His most recent action came in the Brazilian promotion Jungle Punch, and he won two of his last three bouts there. So that's pretty crazy. The UFC is actually going to Natal for its Fight Night 38 on March 23rd. So they bring a very big security presence in the wake of these killings here. Unreal. Now, there's an interesting story about... We talked with Anthony Rumble Johnson, I think, a couple of years ago now. Maybe back in 2009 or 2010, maybe longer. But back then, he was just, on the tail end of his UFC career. Now he's back in the UFC after leaving the promotion and stringing together some wins. And he has wasted no time with his new platform here, stirring up debate. And, of course, now he's talking about two huge issues that you could call the elephants in the room. We've got performance-enhancing drugs is the one issue, and then the other one is fighter pay. And he lumped them all together. And basically, obviously, he's in the same division as the guy that's been in TRT discussions for a long time now, Vitor Belfort. And there's still talk about whether he's going to get licensed for his next fight. Never mind be cleared to take TRT. Johnson said, in every sport, people are using something. I mean, as long as nobody dies, nobody pulls a Chris Benoit, you know what I'm saying? I think everything is going to be fine. If it's something that can absolutely help you, I don't see what the problem is. Until that moment you go crazy on the person, whoever it may be, you can't absolutely blame the, I don't know, just a big situation. If you abuse it, of course you're going to get popped for it and do stupid stuff. But if you use it the right way and you just do what you're supposed to do, then stop. But with the way the world is right now, hell, you can, everything is messed up right now. I don't know, man. If you think you can do it, do it. I don't have nothing against it. You know what I'm saying? As long as you don't kill nobody. So that's kind of a strange response. But, it sounds like he's talking as somebody who has tried this stuff, so he doesn't come right out and say it, but he definitely has the mentality, it seems like, hey, you know, no harm, no foul, basically, and it's no big deal. And he also said, I told my manager and stuff, I was like, dude, I know these guys work out hard and stuff like that, that's what we do, but I'm like, ain't no way in hell anybody is supposed to go 25 minutes in a championship fight all out like that without gassing some type of way. Even if you pace yourself, you need to be ready for another 3 rounds after the 5 rounds, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. They got to be taking something. You got to take something, even legal or illegal. Training as we do, you have to take something. Doesn't have to be illegal, but you have to do something. You can't just say, I'm going to go home and go to sleep and just wake up in the morning and feel better. It doesn't work like that. And Johnson also agreed with the notion that if PEDs were illegal, it would actually help the level playing field in MMA, as others called too. But he also said, I'm about to say something stupid, and said if salaries in MMA were comparable to Major League Baseball, then maybe there would be less cheaters within the sport trying to get ahead. He didn't say is that you get guys like A-Rod and all them, they make millions per game, we making a couple thousand. Be like, man, that's pocket change for me. Hell, I'm probably about to say something stupid, but I'm about to say either pay us like them MLB players, have to use it, or let us use it to get to that level. One or the other. Obviously, none of these fighters in MMA currently are making anywhere near what the top athletes on Major League Baseball are making. Johnson suggests that performance-enhancing drugs would have less of a place in MMA if the fighters made more money. I don't know if I agree with that. But part of the reason why these guys feel the need to take performance-enhancing drugs is because of the pressure to perform, and with the performance equals more pay. And most of these things are by bonus or whether it's by future contract negotiations that you hash out after. They are a little bit tangential, I think. They go together, but I don't necessarily think just paying these guys more is going to eliminate the problem.
Yeah, I would agree, but very interesting comments by him, though. I wonder what some of the fallout will be on there.
Well, for stuff like that, I mean, he's not really complaining about his own particular paycheck. He's saying, and he's not really... he's not really criticizing the UFC outright for being cheap. He's just saying, if these guys got made this much, then this would happen, you know? So I don't think he's on the same plane as some of the other people Dana White lashed out at for criticizing the fighter pay system. So I think they'll go easy on him if they do pull a rebuttal. But the guy hasn't had his first fight in the octagon yet. He's kind of showing some balls there with these tirades that he's had. We'll have to try to get him back on the show so we can get some of our own tirades. Anyway, Victor Chinian. I don't know if you heard about the praying mantis there, Tony, but he's training right now with Ronda Rousey's trainer, Edmund Tarverdian, 38-year-old boxer Victor Chinian. He's the former IBF, WBC, and WBA super flyweight champion, and he's going to make his MMA debut in his adopted home country of Australia. So this would be, I think, the, I guess, other than Ray Mercer, who had that one fight in MMA, this would be the biggest boxer in a long time to make that transition.
What about James Toney?
James Toney doesn't really count in my book. But, yeah, James Toney, he did kind of make the transition. But this is I think, an even bigger deal. Because Vic is obviously pretty serious about it. It's not a gimmick. I guess you could say the same thing about Ray Mercer, too, because I think he took it seriously, even though he thought he was going to be going into a boxing match with Tim Sylvia. And he turned it into one. He actually had two fights. He had the Tim Sylvia fight and Jimbo. So he actually tried to make more than one thing out of it, whereas James Toney was just a freak show from the beginning, and that was it. Anyway, getting back to the story. Herodian said they actually gave him a fight with Victor Garcia. It's good pay. He's happy, and he wants to do it. The opponent and big date and location are all to be determined, but expected it's going to happen sometime in late April and the flyweight division. And Garcia is going to start his training at Glendale Fighting Club. And he told me, I'm coming around there, and I'm being honest, I just need 3 or 4 inches, and then I'll punch somebody and break somebody's jaw, even on the ground. Garcia said. And Tverdian said, I'm like, Vic, it's not all about a couple of inches. He goes, no, all I need is just a little bit of distance. And when I hit him, I'll break him. Like to call the praying mantis has a record 39-6-1. Lost. See how that goes. Now we got another story that's just the opposite. A man named Mafia Mafia is actually leaving MMA to go to boxing. He's getting a Taranaki Rug representative. Already has this MMA, and on Friday night he'll make the boxing debut on the undercard of the Asia Pacific Heavyweight Title Fight from the TSB Stadium. A 36-year-old Suburban went with an 18-year-old and signed to play for the England Rugby Club. He retired rugby at the end of last season. He's gone into mixed martial arts. Leaving mixed martial arts for boxing. He actually competes in a lot of grappling competitions. And a national MMA intermediate class title in Auckland last year. His wife's actually on board with the transition. He says, I think she prefers boxing to me doing MMA stuff. She struggled with me doing MMA, so to be fair to her, I decided to stop. And he didn't hesitate for a moment when asked if he was interested in fighting on fight night. I had been all along to the fight night when Sam made his pro debut and thought that was pretty good. I wanted to help him out and said, yep, just to get involved and see what boxing was like. He soon learned boxing was quite unlike cage fighting. He says the skill level is a lot different for starters and the fitness levels are a lot different. Boxing is really demanding mentally and hard to prepare for. And he takes on David Russell, formerly of New Plymouth and now based in Auckland. With the MMA background, we've met socially before, but haven't competed again. And the main event will be Bronco Chauncey Welliver, Billy the Hilliard Hammer Wright. It's gotta be the only boxer named Chauncey. Jones is in the news again, and may kind of been making us think about the way the UFC is marketing different people. And this actually got a little bit of a rise out of Ronda Rousey in her latest conference call. She responded to some of these comments and actually said that, you know, she didn't have a lot of help along the way, and she deserves the help that she's getting now from the UFC. But Jones basically said that, you know, some people get treated differently than the others. He says, we don't always see eye to eye with the UFC. I don't know if they are always necessarily pushing me, and whether that's a smart idea on their end or not. Who knows? I do know that they're pushing Ronda Rousey really hard, and she's gotten a lot of great opportunities. I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm pushing myself all the time, so I'm not really worried. I know that I'm a lot different from some of the guys in the past, guys like Chuck Liddell, guys like Matthews. Time, and of course they're trying to change a lot of things in the game, making sure the fighters are respected, making sure our own brand is being respected, things like that. The eye to eye on everything. Obviously Rousey's also been marketing herself up out of the cage and off the UFC. She's been doing movies and stuff like that, so I think she's had a lot of help that she produced on her own. Up there, getting the job done, and, you know, doing the right thing with the opportunities that have come her way. And also, not to knock John Jones too bad, but she's got a pretty spotless record outside the cage as far as no major controversial incidents. And flipping the bird all the time on the hill. She doesn't have a DUI or anything in her background like John Jones does, and she hasn't had to apologize really for anything other than maybe not shaking hands with Misha Tate. That's probably the worst controversy. But bird and respect, and he didn't really insult her. He just was kind of like, to getting all this attention. He does have a couple of points. But, you know, for a guy to come out and say that he's trying to change things, I don't know. I don't know if I would go that far that way, because, you know, just speaking up is one thing, but actually trying to change things, take a little more than speaking up. So I would, if it's really truly serious about changing things, we do a little bit more than, you know, give some comments from the peanut gallery every so often. Did you mention in this spot that he's kind of bucked the trend of, you know, towing the UFC line? One example was these the headphones that the UFC tried to market called Octagon headphones or something. And everybody was walking around with them except for him. And he's basically not going to push a product unless he receives fair market value in return. So that was one of the things they mentioned. He's been different. But again, that's not a big deal, I don't think. So I'd like to see him really step up and try to use his position if he's really truly serious about changing things. Use your position to really move the ball instead of just pretending like you're doing a lot. Anyway, Nevada State Athletic Commission is up to about 350 applications as of this article from last week. And a search official said he plans to contact 32 people who applied so far. And then they'll narrow that down from 16 of those 32. No names have been made public, but Keith Kaiser stepped down on January 10th. The job pay is $95,000 a year. And five names will be submitted to the commission for interviews next month. They will have a new executive director hired by April. And speaking of another guy we got to get back on the show sometime, the world's dangerous man is in the news again. Hall of Famer Ken Shamrock celebrate his 50th birthday. Actually, he already did celebrate his 50th birthday this past Tuesday. Shout out to his 50th birthday. He started in MMA back in September of 1993 when I was still in high school. He did at UFC 1 month later. He went on to become the Super Fight Champion. And was an open designation that was used prior to the introduction of former weight classes. Shamrock also held the heavyweight King of Pancras crown, founded the famed Lion's Den training camp, and fought Tito Ortiz in one of MMA's most lucrative rivalries, also serving as a coach in season 3 of the Ultimate reality show. He compiled a 7-2 record in the UFC, losing 4 of his final inside the cage, and he was inducted to the UFC Hall of Fame alongside at UFC 45 in 2000. He secured 23 of his career wins by submission in the last King of Cage banner in November of 2010. Punches from journeyman Mike Bork. He also dabbled in professional wrestling, although I wouldn't call it dabbling. He was in WWE and Total Nonstop Professional Wrestling. He got a start, I think. Why they call it dabbling. If he didn't make a career out of it, I guess. No, I came to know the world's dangerous man. That's how he got his nickname. It wasn't even a nickname. Other birthdays this week. On the same day as Shamrock, we had Stephen Thompson turn 31. Yesterday, we had John Matson turn 34. Elvis Sinosik turns 43 today. And Anthony Lapsley turns 34. We've got Micah Miller turns 27 on Valentine's Day tomorrow. Chris Mierzwiak, never heard of him, turns 26, and Jason Jones, 25 tomorrow. Friday, Brian Rogers turns 30, Steven Seiler is 27, Ciro Rodriguez is 25. We got a couple from February 9th, Sunday. 9th, Mark Munoz turned 36, Charlie Brenneman turned 33, Jake Rosholt turned 32, Jake Hecht turned 30, and Felipe Arantes turned 26. And we had on the 10th, Matt Horwich turned 36, Nick Ring, 35, Marius Radziwicki. That's it for the interviews.
Boy, all these Aquarians in MMA, I wonder what the astrological significance is. I'll have it researched. Have a full report next week.
And Ronda Rousey, I just mentioned, she's been doing the movies. Well, now she's tapped for 2 upcoming movies. She's being reported as one of the female leads in the upcoming Entourage movie, and also as the star of the Athena Project. That story follows a top-secret all-female Delta Force counter-terrorism unit codenamed the Athena Project. And they are sent to sent in to hunt out and kill a master terrorist after a bombing in Rome kills 20 Americans. Trouble ensues once the team realizes this is more than a simple bomb. But the first movie will be the Entourage movie. The Athena Project doesn't even have a writer attached to the project yet. Actually began her Hollywood career by joining the cast of The Expendables 3 and then followed that up with a stint on The Fast and Furious 7. Both of those pictures were shot in September of 2013. And we'll see what happens there. But it's pretty big news for her. Probably a big payday, too. And we talked last week about Freddie Roach and Dana White getting a little back and forth about headaches. And I don't know if I read this last week, but Dana White came out with a pretty serious tirade. It says, the crazy stuff I keep hearing back from George St. Pierre is unbelievable. No, George St. Pierre never complained to us about headaches. George St. Pierre has never publicly said the real reasons why he stepped away from the UFC for a year. When he sat down with Lorenzo Fertitta and I, it was a whole different set of issues, personal problems. It had nothing to do with headaches or drug testing or anything else. I don't know if he's just trying to draw a smoke screen to what he's really dealing with and doesn't want to publicly talk about it. I don't know. So, as we mentioned, George St. Pierre had said that the UFC's lack of support of his plan to do intensive drug testing for the Hendricks fight was an issue. And he also mentioned some issues to Freddie Roach about having headaches. Obviously, Roach came out in an interview where he talked about that. And, Dana White apparently feels the need to try to tell everybody what George St. Pierre is thinking, I guess, or what he really thinks and what he's really all about, rather than come to the conclusion that GSP might have told him something different than what he told his trainer, Freddie Roach. So I think Dana White's really trying to minimize the idea that one of his big stars might have some brain injury going on. Whatever these personal problems are, I mean, I don't know where he's just kind of lumping that in as a different thing. You know, what if that's one of the personal problems that he's having, is his health. You know, that's a personal problem. I've heard of one, so... that could definitely be part of his reasoning, and that could be lumped in with that. And we don't know what these personal problems really are, if it's anything else. Never heard any indication that were supposed rumors about his dad's health and a possible pregnancy. And those have been debunked, so I don't know. I don't know how you can just sit there and say, well, that's the only reason why he's leaving. We don't even know what those reasons really are. I would think somebody's having headaches before his fight and after his fight. It's a bigger reason than having some kind of personal life issues.
Okay, so if Dana would think he could try to suppress the whole thing about brain damage, I mean, first off, would anyone really be that shocked if they look at an activity like MMA and say, geez, I can't believe these guys are getting any brain damage. I mean, it kind of could go with the territory, almost like boxing.
Right?
So, I don't see the angle there. I mean, first off, I don't think he could keep it hidden. But even if he could, I mean, we all know that it's the assumption of risk, and it's a contact sport, same as the NFL, same as boxing. It goes with the territory.
Yeah, and, obviously it's not related, but we had a big incident with Thiago Silva. And apparently his wife has alleged that he's got some cocaine and alcohol issues. But we often see this type of reckless behavior with people who have brain injuries, too. Way more frequent in football, but... this Thiago Silva thing is pretty serious. And, if you've got guys that have been hit in the head for their whole careers, and they retire and have issues like this with this is a domestic Thiago, but had all kinds of situations like that. There's been some big high-profile ones in the NFL where guys have actually killed themselves at the end of standoffs with police, and at least one guy. I think it was last year a story came out about a guy who was barricaded in his house, ended up shooting himself, and left a note asking for his brain to be studied because he was given cancer. But anyway, Thiago Silva was arrested after he threatened his estranged wife and her lover with a gun and then had an armed standoff with police at his home. This was late Thursday night as we're doing our show, maybe, after our show. And he's been jailed on several charges. 2 counts of attempted murder, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and corruption without violence. During the first court appearance, his attorney, Scott Saul, was able to get the attempted murder charges downgraded to aggravated assault with a firearm and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. But he's still being held without bond. And the UFC wasted no time cutting him. They basically waited until Friday morning to officially terminate his contract. And this is Silva is 31 years old. This altercation with his wife, it was already estranged from his wife for 13 years. They were actually separated in 2012. And she simply admitted to an ongoing extramarital affair with Pablo Popovich, founder of Team Popovich Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, for modern-day. And the police first came to the Silva residence on January 3rd. Thiago confronted his wife over the affair. Thiago initially pointed a pistol revolver at her and put the gun in her mouth, prompting her to obtain a temporary restraining order. And then Thiago violated the restraining order by showing up at the couple's home on February 5th before sending a disturbing text message threatening to kill his wife. The next night, according to the police report, Pesa was training at Popovich's training center when Thiago drove up and blared his horn continuously until she came out. Both vehicle, visibly intoxicated, pointed a Glock firearm at her. You have 10 seconds to bring Pablo outside. If he does not come out, I will go into the gym and start shooting him. And there were 25 students inside the center at the time of the threat. Popovich reportedly came out and approached the car, and Thiago again threatened to kill both Popovich and Thiago before driving away. Popovich ran back inside, locked the door, and called them. And police responded to the incident and tracked the fighter back to his home. Barricaded himself inside, and armed standoff took place. After police surrounded the home, eventually came out and subdued by he most recently ranked 12th in the UFC's light heavyweight division and was supposed to fight Owen St. Pro at UFC 171. He's currently training at Jayco Hybrid Training Center, better known as the Black Zillions, based out of Boca Raton, Florida. 16-3 in MMA, and he's had numerous incidents throughout his time at the UFC. Back in 2011, he had been in for a year. That extra year in Tampa. And defended in 2012 for failing a drug test on a metabolite. And most of his weight for his fight with fellow veteran light hip Hamill. And then won the fight on one card for showing. But his ex-wife is speaking out about the event that led to his shocking arrest. They said married to the former UFC every 8 years, and in 2012, when she claims aggressive Brazilian or balanced subject to her treatment. She said, in our relationship, I had to deal with the imbalance and aggressions, but I never went to talk to the police because I fear the reactions. Even after I was assaulted, I was probably for Kane. He always thinks he's above the law. My neighbor knew she should call the police. He had the cocaine para. Came in my house, tore my clothes, and pointed a gun at my head. I already suffered some abuse, but I always withdrew afraid. She also alleged that the cocaine use caused him to become violent in recent weeks. Attorney Scott Saul says Silva was drunk at the time he allegedly brandished a weapon inside the Popovich Academy, but didn't quote nothing serious, and also thinks his wife's statement was taken out of context during her interview with police. I don't know how you take that out of context. Sounds to me like it's spot on. courts will have to sort that one out, and whether we see Silva in any cage again remains to be seen, other than the lockup prison cage. I doubt anybody will be trying to fight him in prison.
Yeah, I would agree.
Unless they really want to try to prove themselves as a big boss in the cell block. Anyway, another boxing story and an Olympic story. The Olympics are there in Russia, and Australia is participating. Australia is not really a winter country. You don't hear a lot of big winter Olympics. But they do have a contingent over there, of course, and they have some athletes. And one thing, they are flying the boxing kangaroo. In that mascot, which we've had controversy in the past. We've talked about a few times on the show about boxing kangaroos, who have been the center of controversy in different areas across the United States and in other countries. Whether it's you or not, you know, it's up to, for debate, but anything wrong with just having a cartoon or a guy dressed up as a boxing kangaroo, their mascot, so. The International actually had to step in 4 years ago to allow the Australian team to even fly that flag at the Athlete Village back in Vancouver. A security guard this week at the Mogul venue ordered Shane Morris, who is the father of Australian aerial skier, to stop flying the flag. The father, who was there with his wife Margaret and the skier's brother Peter, actually refused the order from the security guard and gave up trying to stop him. An Australian team leader, Ian Chesterman, said Friday in a news conference that, quote, "It's definitely been a symbol of our team, and of course, it's already had some controversy in the past. It's flying in our village area right now, and I'm glad the boxing kangaroo is back in the news." And Dave Morris, the father, said his family was unlikely to hunt down their very visual display in Eliana, and was more likely to do more than just fly the flag the next time they're at the venue. And he says, "My brother has this great old suit. It's disgraceful, but he'll come to wear it tomorrow, or he'll probably come dressed." About it for the big combat sports news of the week. We also have UFC Fight Night 36 over. And here's another little boxing story that just came up on BoxRec. In a very unlikely twist, Carl Frock has agreed to have a rematch with George Groves.
I think it's what, May 31st?
Yeah, they had a pretty epic first matchup. The world super middleweight title. What did you say, Tony?
Epic and controversial.
Controversial, no. A lot of people thought Grove won that one. Frost said, "I'm pleased to finally get my next fight confirmed. We had a number of options, but ultimately I listened to the public and gave them what they wanted. I expect this to be one of the biggest fights the country has ever seen. Period for me following the first fight. I've had to listen to his endless whining and appeals when ultimately the referee did him perhaps the biggest favor possible and saved him from a devastating knockout whilst denying me the right of a clinical finish, great comeback victory. From the first fight, I didn't give him the respect to the lack of drive that I had against Mikel Kessler. Well, now he has my attention, but ultimately it's not going to get any better. The kitchen sink at me that night, and I still found a way back in the fight to win. I love to fight, and I can't wait to get back in there and do a proper job on it. Blessed that I'm getting this fantastic opportunity to participate in what could be Britain's biggest ever boxing the Groves, I'm still shocked that Frost has agreed to take the fight. I respect him. Now I am preparing aggravated physical and mental shape possible to destroy the punch. The rounds. Rick will have its own Hagler Hearns in about for years to come. I am counting down the days until I am super busy. And quite simply, I believe this is the biggest fight. It's true. We'll see. The rematch is the first one. Might not be Gotti versus Ward, but two rivalry here that I'm for luck. Check out the schedule for the week. UFC Fight Night 36 to go through. Main event is Lyoto Machida versus Ugard Mustafa. And this is a very interesting matchup, I think, but I don't think it's much of a fight for Mustafa. Lyoto is 20-4 in his MMA career. Mustafa is 34-3. I think Lyoto's fought way more experienced recent years, but Mustafi, pretty tough dude. And just I think his style is way more comprehensive than all the Machida. Heavily relies on his karate. He really hasn't changed anything up if you look at his last few fights. Lyoto does not bring anything different to the table for any different opponent. He always seems to fight the same fight. It's around that mile you can beat him. So I really like Gegard's chances in this one. And even though he's from Strikeforce, the Strikeforce guys have been getting really beat up lately. He's not really fighting a title contender. He's already had a few fights. Couldn't get the strap, so. I couldn't keep the strap, I should say. I couldn't get it back. So, if he wins here, he might be back in the title hunt, but I think Gegard would have a better chance of putting himself back, or putting himself into that hunt in the first place. I think he's got the game. But you never know. Machida could have the best fight of his life. Demolish himself. A couple guys from Strikeforce. Ronaldo Souza, the main event. This is Carmel, 2-7. Souza, 19-3. We've got also Eric Silva, 15-4 versus Takanori Sato, who is 17-8-7. We've got Vizcarne Andrade, 17-5, fighting Nicholas Musoki, who's 11-2. We've got Charles Valvera, 16-5, fighting Indy Lowe, fighter a few years ago. And we've got Cristiano Marcello, 13-5, fighting a veteran. Joe Proctor, who's 8-2. We've got Rodrigo Dam, 11, fighting Ivan George, 25-3. I've never heard of this guy. We've still got Jesse Bronson, 13-3, fighting Francisco Trinaldo, who's 13-3. We got Yuri Alcantara, 28-5, fighting Wilson Race, who's 17-4. Felipe Arantes, 6-1, fighting Maximo Blanco, 9-5-1. We got Hildemar Alcantara, probably related to Yuri. 19-6, fighting Albert, 12-1. And we have Zubair Tuhugov, 15-3, fighting Douglas Silva DeAndre, who's 22-0. Also, never heard of him. Fighting in the open. Must be somebody that number of like smaller promotions. So I'll be higher up on the card for this one. We've got boxing to talk about, and that's it.
Well, we always do. We don't got much going on tomorrow night. Nothing that would make us forget the innocent Valentine Massacre of 1951, I believe it was. But we got one card that's going to be on ESPN. We'll take a look at that. That is a young man by the name of Emmanuel Taylor, and he just recently signed with good friend of mine, Jay Price, in doing the promotions. And this is a good young fighter here. Emmanuel has a stoppage win over the very impressive Raymond Serrano, who was 18-1. Got stopped him in six rounds a little over a year ago. Had a stoppage win over Victor Manuel Pio back last month. That was his last fight. Now we got a fight here. So yeah, Taylor's 17-1. He has 12 knockouts, and he has pretty good power. His only loss was a split decision loss to Felix Brewer about 2.5 years ago. So now he's stepping up, and we've got a fight. Fighting on the defender here, the name of Pitt Algieri. And it looks to be a quality main event. Now, Algieri is 18-0 with 8 knockouts. He's looking to see himself. I recognize anybody, and I do. He fought a former title contender by the name of Mike Carinotis about 7 months ago, and beat him by unanimous decision. And that looks to be the biggest name on his record right now. So we got two young, nothing better than seeing two young prospects willing, you know, to step in there, one ESPN, main event, and put it on the line. So, I don't know, it actually is pretty cool. I'm on Box Jeff right now. My boy Dave Price actually has a, an advertisement on that. I'm actually going to get you in contact with him to see if he wants to do any advertising on our site.
Cool.
I talked to him about, you know, any of the players, if he ever wants anybody on, so he's absolutely going to say the word and he would.
Saturday night,
I've been
slacking on my booking.
Yes. I see that, and I've been so busy with the and everything myself. The big part that I'm most interested in on Saturday night is one that I really do not be attending now, unfortunately. And that is the one in Las Vegas, the annual boxing home show. Just because of all the tremendous degree weather that we've been having. I could really be going any minute because we're going to be a comfortable snow last night into about noon today. We had a last melt combination of snow and ice. So I could be power literally any minute now. That dog I'm kind of gone. But we don't have much going on in the States Saturday night. I only see two cards in the States, one in California, and actually three, one in Kansas, one in Oklahoma. But the card that I'm interested in is over the seas in the United Kingdom, and we got two heavyweight fights on there, and it looks kind of interesting on there. Let's just see if we got anything else going before I jump into these two. I don't think we're going to have anything televised unless they televise them over in England, which I don't think they are. But the main event we have is Derek Chisora, former world title challenger. Tough guy. He has a goofy hairdo. And he's 19-4. He's got 13 knockouts. He's on a four-fight win streak, four-fight knockout streak. His last loss back in 2012, the stoppage David Hay. He actually had a three-fight losing streak in there. And back then, he lost out of his
four losses. They came in a total of five fights. A decision loss to Thomas Fury, a decision loss to undefeated Robert Helaeus, a world title shot at Vitaly Klitschko, which he lost by decision, and a stoppage loss to David Haye. So you're looking at four quality opponents that had beat him. He's on the comeback trail now. Like I said, he's on a four-fight win streak. He's fighting an American by the name of Kevin Johnson, who for a while they thought had a real shot to be a highly touted professional. And then all of a sudden, you know, his career, he had a unanimous decision loss to both distance to beat Vitaly Klitschko a couple of years ago, but really didn't put much of an effort into it. Had a few fights winning again. Then he had a decision loss to Tyson Fury and a decision loss to Christian Hammer in his last fight back in December, losing 8 of the 10 rounds in that card. So you got one here. It's going to be in Chisora's hometown, and he's building towards a rematch with Fury. So you got to figure that he is the favorite coming into the fight. The other fight on the card that really caught my eye was the aforementioned Tyson Fury. And I still say that is one of the coolest names in boxing, because Tyson, you always think of Mike Tyson, and then the last name is Fury. I mean, it sounds cool. And who the hell was his fight?
There it is.
And he is fighting a guy that I've actually covered a few times. A tough but limited fighter from the state of Minnesota by the name of Joey Abel. So Tyson Fury, still on the team, he's 21-0, he's got 16 knockouts. He had that. He hasn't fought since his fight with Steve Cunningham last April, where he came off the deck, kind of wear Cunningham down, and finally stopped him in the 7th round. Joey Abel is 29-7. 28 of his 29 wins are by knockout. 5 of his 7 losses are also by knockout. He is not a guy that likes to get a distance. And fight, I don't. And as much as I like Joey, I've covered him a few times. He's got good punching power. Honestly, I do not see him this fight really going past 3 or 4 rounds. I know when he fought Chris Arreola, he got knocked out in 1 round. Perez Rekendo stopped him in 9. He's had a. In fact, Tom, when we. Wait, no, you weren't at that fight with me. Never mind. This is a different fight. But there was another guy that I've covered a couple times, other than Aaron Lyons, knocked him out in 1 round. He also likes to end fights in 1 and 2 rounds. So don't expect this one to go too far past 3. And you got to think Tyson Fury is going to be the one with his hands raised. That's really all I got for the weekend in pro boxing. I mean, we got some cards in, Mexico. We got some cards in Russia. Don't really see any big major title fights, or at least fights with household names. I'm looking at it right now, and nothing. Oh, here's one that kind of caught my attention. In Denmark, and the only reason, there's the management advertisement, and the only reason this one caught my attention was because we interviewed one of the fighters. The fighter that's favored over in Denmark is a fighter by the name of Patrick Nielsen. He won an over 10 knockouts, and he is fighting into, we just interviewed a matter of months ago by the name of Jimmy Jenner. It was 16-3, 11 knockouts. No better Jetter. And we just spoke to him a few months ago, and, he was talking about trying to make some moves, and, hey, he's got a shot here. Fight for the WBC silver title, whatever that means.
He also said he hates Derek Jeter, which made him number one in my book.
And honestly, that's really all I see as of any interest going on Saturday.
What about Derek Chisora versus Kevin Johnson?
I talked about that theory.
You talked about that already?
Tom, didn't I?
No, I don't think so.
But
That was in the Tyson Fury.
Eric Bisora, was coming back. He's on a four-fight knockout streak, and he had a loss to Tyson Fury. He had a loss in a title fight to Vitaly Klitschko. He fought with Kevin Johnson. Kevin Johnson coming off a unanimous decision loss where he lost 8 of his 10 rounds. And he was a prospect for a while. He went the distance with Vitaly back in 09, but he is definitely going to be the B-side fighter in this fight. And Chisora, they're looking to see if they can get him a rematch with Tyson Fury. Does any of that ring a bell to you guys? Because I talked about it.
Yeah.
My brain damage, but I'm not that bad.
Fury, but for some reason I don't remember you mentioning the name of I got a couple more fights here to mention. There's a pretty interesting card here from Dublin. And it's kind of funny because the only Irish guys that are on it, outright Irish sounding names, but way down on the card, not even anywhere near the main event, and none of them have very good records. But we have the main event there on Saturday from National Stadium in Dublin, Ireland, is Hassan Ndam Jukha. Probably not pronouncing that correct, but he's 28-1 with 17 knockouts, facing Ricardo Marcelo Romalo, who is 15-4-1 with 11 knockouts. Also on the card as the co-main event are cruiserweights, 10-round cruiserweight fight, Yuri Kayembre Kalenga, obviously not an Irish name there. He is 18-1 with 12 knockouts, fighting Caesar David Krenz, 21-7 with 13 knockouts. No titles involved there, but you have to go all the way down to the first two fights of the night to get a guy with an Irish-sounding name. There's a cruiserweight six-rounder between David McGuire, who's making his pro debut, so he has no record to speak of. He's fighting most four draws. We have a welterweight fight between Sonny Upton, who's 1-1, and McCauley, who's obviously an Irish name. McCauley is 11-64, five draws. I don't know what's going on over there in Dublin, but you need some more Irish fighters. It is what it is. I also noticed we have an interesting on that card that you talked about with Derek Chisora. Actually, Steve Collins Jr. is on that card. Steve Collins Jr. is 3-0 already. He's fighting Tommy Gifford, 1-2. So it's good to see that family keeping up the tradition.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a whole lot going on this weekend.
I also mentioned earlier that Oliver McCall is still fighting, and mentioned him on last week's Friday Night Fights. He actually pulled up his Smart Track record. 57-13. 37 knockout wins, and of course only one knockout loss to Lennox Lewis. After he beat Lewis in a called knockout there, he's got his revenge. And that's pretty interesting. His last three fights, he fought overseas, first one in Germany back in May of 2012. Lost that fight to Francesco Pianetta. At the time, he was 25-0-1. Then fought another undefeated fighter in Gino, and that was Christoph Zimnok, who was 14-0-1. He lost fight by unanimous decision. And then past weekend, actually on February 1st, before this past week, he fought Marcin Rakowski, who was 12-0, also in Poland. He won that by split decision, by scores of 77-74, 75-76, and 77-75. So, 2 points on one card and three on another. Got him to win there. But that's pretty interesting that he's still fighting. He's aged 48 years old. So I've got another birthday coming up on March 1st. Man, good for him. He'll be not only fighting, but he actually won a title. The vacant World Boxing Foundation Intercontinental Heavyweight title in 2011, August of 2011. It'd be Damon Wills. He had 30 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw. That was a 10-round fight. Again, by a really close margin. But it was a unanimous decision. Actually, it was close on 2 cards. It was 97-93 on 1 card, 97-93 on 2 cards, and 97-94. So that's pretty good deal for trying to show sometime. Also had a notable win against Fresa Kendo back in December 2010. Two last wins. He had a loss to Boswell after that. 2011. But as he gets older, it doesn't seem like he's stepping down in competition anymore. The last guy with a losing record that he fought, he's got to go back a ways here. 7-12. Back in 2006, he fought a guy named Walt McDaniel. Knocked him out in 3 rounds. North Charleston, South Carolina. Daniel was 7-12. That's the last time he fought a guy with a losing record. Actually, take that back. It was 2007, February 24th. He fought Marion Wilson. He was 12-40.
That is just amazing that guys can keep going with a record like that. You know, 12-40, I mean, you'd think that would be a hint that maybe you need a new vocation. Wow.
But it's also pretty amazing that all of them are going at the caliber he's going. We'll have to find what his secret is, where he's drinking from, where his whiskey's from, that you.
Yeah. One of the saddest things that I ever read, during all the years that I've followed the sport of boxing, and this was just within the last 7 or 8 years, maybe even more recent than that, I can't remember for sure. You were saying, sometimes why do you guys continue on when they're 12-40? It's like, I've trained with a lot of guys, and they've been in like inner city Philadelphia gyms, and sometimes you get these guys and. We'll see you got Fearless Freddie Pendleton, who's 15-15, and you got a fight on ESPN. He was brought in basically to lose to Roger Mayweather. And they always said about Freddie was, he had bad management early in his career. They were taking a lot of fights out of town, a lot of fights on short notice. He wasn't fully preparing himself. And they said, get this fight with Mayweather, and he sort of really trained it. He started doing a lot of road work. And he really dedicated himself to this fight, and he ends up knocking Mayweather out. And he ends up going on to win a world title, and, made a decent amount of money. So you get a lot of these guys, they see that, hey, I can still get a break. That's one thing. Other times,
hey guys, this is a good bad manager. I've seen it happen. I've seen managers take money for a fight, and I'm like, hey, I want to build up my fighter here. But if I'm taking a fight, get it like maybe like a 50-50 type of shot, or my guy's a favorite guy, we might only get $500 for this fight. And then if he builds his record up making me $500, then when the big money comes in, he's going to leave me and sign with somebody else. And so let's take the $1,000 or the $1,500, and we're going to go in there on the B side. So we're going to get paid more money, but we're going to be the fighter that's pretty much going to come in there against somebody more experienced. I knew a guy, it was his pro debut, he's fighting a guy that was a former Olympian. And, of course, he gets beat in that fight and pretty much derails his career. And I've seen that happen. So a lot of times, you know, guys that have bad records, they took a lot of fights maybe they shouldn't have. And then they become basically paid opponents. And you hate to see that, but it is the truth. Other times, the idea of being, hey, that's my job. It's like almost like you're watching professional wrestling and you got your superstar out there and they're building him up, so they put him in there with a bunch of guys that he's going to destroy. You used to see that a lot of times on the Saturday mornings. They'd have, like, Ultimate Warrior and Randy Macho Man Savage and Jake the Snake on, and they were building their career up. And they're just going up against there and it's like, Kevin Snow, and they're, you know, destroying him in 3 minutes and making him something to do. So these guys become, like, what we call a jobber. They were going in there and basically just knowing they're going to lose, and they do the job well. Not to say it's scripted or they're taking a dive, but, you know, they, you know, brought in to get tickets and have the clear one, and they don't need any training. Sometimes I don't know anything else to do, and that's the only way you can make money. I met a kid from West Virginia about 10 years ago. He was at the Fort Myers Allentown. And the kid came up a couple times, and he lost every time, but every time he was competitive. We were talking to him after the fight. Tough kid. And they were going to suspend him. The Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission was not going to give him another license because he was losing these fights. And I'm like, but he wasn't getting knocked out. He was competitive, but he just didn't have the tools. And he was coming up there by himself. He would find a trainer at the weigh-in that was kind of like hanging there, like, hey, if I was at a weigh-in right now, yeah, I'm a trainer. Okay, you know, and I'd show my credentials. Hey, I'll work your corner for like $20. Wrap your hands up, work your corner, put a towel around my neck, give you a squirt of water, and pretty much not put a lot of interest in you because you're going to lose. I'm going to give you some advice. So if you go back to Rocky One at the very beginning when he's with the trainers, like, hey, you want some advice? And the guys are like, here, you want some water? And that's what these guys do. But we're talking to these guys. You know why I do this? Because I know if I come up to Pennsylvania to fight, I'll make a couple $100 for this fight. Because it's better than, you know, I just can't, it'll take me about 2 weeks to make that in my small, tiny, poor West Virginia town, my backwoods town. Because we don't really have jobs down there. Because this is the best way I can make some money. And the saddest one I ever remember, and I don't know the guy personally, and I didn't know him personally, but was a fighter, and he was pretty much a guy that would go from town to town, and he was a guy that was going there, and he was pretty much news, and was blazing how to make money, and he was out in Utah, I think it was, and his mother had passed away back home. I forget where home was, but she had passed away, and he needed money to go home to her funeral. And he was an out-of-shape guy, you know, but he was a pro fighter, never really got to train that hard. And he took a fight so he could get enough money to go to his home, to his mother's funeral. And after the fight, he had a heart attack and died.
Wow.
Cancel the fight after Damon Martin. Martin decided the death threats against his children were too much, I guess, and wasn't enough money for him to sacrifice his morals in this. So he pulled out, will not promote that fight, and another promoter on an online website was planning to stream the fight and have George fight like a fight club type of atmosphere with more than one opponent, I guess. And that was he has to begin with, but apparently they decided against doing it eventually because Trayvon Martin's family refused any donations that would come from it, so they gave that as their excuse. So hopefully it'll be officially done. We'll hear about this again. Obviously, we missed a lot more important stories. That one kept plodding the air. So that's about it for me until next week. I guess that's all for us, and we will definitely have somebody else. Maybe all of them a call if I can track them out.
Well, I'll say hasta la vista, baby. I hope we do some good fights at ESPN tomorrow night. Hopefully, I'll lose power. Cross my fingers. My office is closed today. It's kind of nice to see that in the snow. Looking much to watch on Saturday. Unfortunately, I will be alive to make it to Las Vegas. But I'm sure I'll find a way to occupy myself.
All right.
All right, sounds like a plan. Let's enjoy whatever fights we can find.
Exactly.
See you guys next week.
Adios. Thanks for stopping by.